As we jump in, I don't want to allow the moment to pass, because I know I'll forget this on the tail end. If you are a teenager in the youth group, if you're a parent of a teenager in the youth group, or even a little sibling, if you are a parent of a senior or extended family because you came here for this morning, we have a giant breakfast prepared as soon as we're done with service, and I hesitate to tell you that right now and have you thinking about biscuits and other things. But at the same time, we intentionally over-ordered food because we want to celebrate our seniors in big fashion, and they're going to hear good words from parents and from other loved ones this morning. It should be a special time. As I reflect back on way too long ago, the portion of my life ago it was that I was a graduating senior, gets bigger every single year. But as I think about that transition and I think about the springboard into life, for me, it felt a little bit lackluster. Like everybody built it up maybe too much. And then when I transitioned to Middle Tennessee State, and like it almost didn't feel different enough. And maybe it's because I moved 6 miles out of my mom's house instead of to a new town. Maybe it's because maybe it's a different route. But at the same time, I think it's more because people hyped it up so much that I thought it was going to be this new life that I was living, when in actuality, I felt like it was just a new chapter. Maybe just a little bit more freedom, but also more responsibility. It's a weird season. I also remember, as new responsibility and challenges got put in front of me, I remember my youth minister at the time asked me to, and a group of senior guys, to share in front of the entire church on a Sunday night. So like today is Senior Sunday, and then tonight at my church growing up, it would have been like the senior's chance to share with the entire church. And when I say chance, I mean obligation, because we got strong-armed into it, which is not a slam. It's just to say I was terrified, and I wanted to say no. I begged to say no, and they said, this is what you're doing, and you're going to do great. And so I got up front, and I remember having 5 minutes allotted, and I practiced a lot. I was very, very nervous. You may not realize it, I get very, very nervous. Anytime I'm going to speak in front of people, I get sweaty, I get super nervous, especially if I factor Spanish at all. So this morning, I'll just keep it just in English. But as I think about factoring, like approaching that talk, I remember practicing in front of my mirror, in front of my mom. I think I practiced in front of my dog before my mom, because it would be a much easier audience with no feedback. And after I got up I remember getting up and having a pulpit to stand on, and I remember starting. And I remember getting done, but there was 94 seconds that went by, not 5 minutes. I squeezed it into 94 seconds, and I kind of blacked out. I don't remember what I said. And as I kind of held the pulpit, because I didn't breathe that whole time, I only exhaled and shared words. And I remember going to sit down, and afterward, the line of people that showed up for all of us that shared a single word to tell us what a great job we did and over-exaggerate what a good job we did as part of their obligation and kindness. I say all those things to say, I was terrified. I didn't do a great job. I remember being so glued to my notes that I just read it as fast as humanly possible, like an auctioneer speed. And I'm going to talk quicker anyway. I realize that. I speak very, very quickly. So as I remember having that moment and just being overwhelmed with the bad job I did and the way that still people showed grace and expressed love, and I think that was a gift, because I was self-aware enough to realize in real time that I did not do a great job. That's not asking for more pats on the back when I'm done with this at all. That is much more of just acknowledging that I was celebrated more than the skill set should have allotted. And I think that's incredibly telling on how Jesus approaches life with us. As we think about God not calling only the qualified, Him not just reaching out to only the most talented orators and speakers and teachers and other people to put them in a place, but He called me out because I had a heart for teenagers and I enjoyed the relational aspect to ministry. And so He called me to it. And as I approached, I fell backwards so many times. As you approach ministry, failing and getting yourself up and trying again is the important thing. So I want to tell you a weird, embarrassing, rambling path that led me to where I am now. Not at all to celebrate me. I think you're going to see very, very quickly that as on my approach, so many pitfalls or roadblocks or other things that stand in the way sometimes, God still shows up anyway. I still remember, I'm going to speak specifically about a few people that helped shape me and the way that I feel all of us are called to be those people for other people. And it won't look the exact same because we're all so different. All of our gifts, all of our talents are so different that as we approach our skill sets at the intersection of that and serving Jesus, really cool stuff unfolds. I remember going out to Colorado as a freshman in college and going skiing with some buddies of mine, and I wasn't a great skier, but I wasn't a mountain guide. Like, these guys had just worked out in the mountains of Colorado a whole summer at a Christian backpacking company, and they were going just to hang out with the friends they had made working out there and getting to go ski in Colorado. I went as a tag along, a plus one. So we get to Colorado at a place that I fell in love with very quickly. But as we're skiing and we get to the lodge that night, and the guy that runs the kind of backpacking agency there, he's talking with all the guides, and he's kind of talking old stories and other things, and I have no commonality with them. I'd not spent any time in the mountains of Colorado. I wasn't a camper. I was actually watercolor painting with his two daughters at the other end of the table, a toddler and a four-year-old. And as we were painting and like watercoloring, I worked with kids a lot, Tommy pulled me aside, and he pulled me off to the side, and he said, "Hey, man, would you want to work out here and be a backpacking guide?" And I remember like looking on both sides and be like, "Is he realize who he's talking to?" And I said, "You don't want me." And he said, "No, I do. And I said, "But I don't know anything about backpacking. I don't own a backpack, like other than my school bag. I don't have the gear. I don't have any of these things my friends talk about. I don't have a shared experience. I don't know anything about that." And he said to me words that I will carry with me the rest of my life. He said, "I can teach you how to learn about backpacking. I can't teach you how to approach people. Like, that's a skill set I see in you." And he spoke truth into something he saw in me. That's not a brag. He could have taken time to speak about all my shortcomings. He didn't do that. That's not the way an encouraging teacher operates. But he called out something he saw in me, and he challenged me to do something that was outside my current skill set. That's a weird combination. And it challenged a 19-year-old Aubrey to come out and be a trek guide out in the summer of, you know, the summer of way too long ago, and fell in love with backpacking, fell in love with the mountains, fell in love with youth ministry. And during that season, Robin and I are out there guiding. And as we start our dating and we start, you know, we're engaged and we're looking toward a life of, she's already a teacher. I was looking at being a teacher and a basketball coach. And we had a youth ministry couple that were on trail with us 1 week, and they pulled us aside and they said, "Hey, have you two ever thought about doing youth ministry like together?" And I remember laughing, not because I thought youth ministry wasn't a noble venture, but I remember I had my plan. I had what I thought was my layout. I had the direction. And I remember laughing, being like, "No." Like, I remember in my head thinking, I was a nightmare for my youth minister growing up. Why would I subject myself to what I did to youth ministers when I was in my youth? Still to this day, when I have a crazy youth event, something comes up, I call my old youth minister, and as soon as he answers, he's already laughing to say, "What kind of event did you have?" Because he knows I'm calling to apologize for who I used to be, and then just to catch up on the world we live in. And as I say that jokingly, in that moment when a youth minister couple pulled me and Robin aside and said, "Hey, y'all thought about doing this?" And I had my instant reaction was to laugh. And then we just kind of moved on. We had our plan. We had what we thought we were going to do. We're praying for that thing. And the next week, we were together. And we had another youth minister, totally unrelated from that first week, said, "Hey, have you guys, like, this could be cool if y'all did youth ministry. Have you ever thought about that?" And we looked at each other, but then I still kind of laughed. It was a very Abram and Sarai moment of being like, "I mean, but that's not what we want. Thanks. It's really cool that you would compliment us, but no thank you." And then a third week in a row, somebody came in and said to us the same thing. And so we started thinking, okay, maybe youth ministry is our track. Maybe this is what we're supposed to go after. And this is an important crossroads to tell you what I have told every single senior for 20 years when they ask me. I usually wait till they want to talk about college, because those of you with seniors this year, you know, when you start talking about which school you're going to go to, what are you thinking? What are you going to study? What are you going to do? The collective eye roll that these seniors have, not because they hate plans, but because some of them just don't know yet, and they're figuring it out. By raising of hands, and I'm going to ask the seniors, y'all look around for a second. By raising of hands, how many of you had no clue who you wanted to be as an adult as you began post-high school? Anybody? I expected more hands than that. Some of you are probably too nervous to raise your hand right now, and I respect that. But as I think about the number of times I switched my major 2 times before I took my first class. Like, I was just so on the fence about it that I declared my first major, and I truly didn't know what it was. It sounded cool, and I saw a few people that were friends of mine that were doing that thing. That's not the way to choose your future. So then I realized very quickly after that, like before I took my first class, oh, that's not even a field I'm interested in. So I switched. And then that's not what I am now. And that is okay. Like, for me, taking God with us on the journey and collectively moving forward is such an important thing. But as I think about my own path, which is not a recipe and it's not a roadmap at all, it's very, very different than what a lot of people would recommend or enjoy. But to me, the cool thing about finding myself being called toward youth ministry, and then as Robin and I navigate this path of feeling called toward it, and then we still started feeling tugs toward missions and ministry. So we started looking at Africa, and friends of ours that are still there now raised money, and they were going through the process of creating a team and going over to do amazing, great things in Tanzania, Africa. And during that season, Robin and I, as we start thinking about raising money and moving our pre-family, we don't have kids at that point, we're just two people looking at launching into the world, and we started feeling uncomfortable, not because it wasn't a good thing, we just felt like maybe God's showing us something different. So we prayed together, where we prayed one night in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, we prayed, "God, just show us something different Otherwise, we're going to Africa. That's not a threat. It's not an ultimatum. I guess maybe kind of, but it's a good thing for missions. And about 11 hours later, Tom Norville called me. Tom Norville was an old preacher here. Tom Norville calls me. I'd never heard his name before. I had no clue who he was. But he apparently knew through youth ministry contacts. And he called me and he said, hey, would you consider coming and just interviewing for us? We're looking for a youth minister. And my first words out of my mouth were not wise. And I said, well, just so you'll know, I don't have my degree yet, still working on that. I have no experience in ministry except for an internship. And honestly, I got laughed off my only phone interview I had in youth ministry. I tried to call church the other day, and they were like, you don't have a degree. You don't have anything else. And I was still a little sideways about it. And so I told Tom that. He goes, don't say any of that in the interview. Just show up and talk about your love for kids and what you want to do in youth ministry. That's it. And I said, okay. And we fell in love with it. We fell in love with this place. So over 20 years ago, we walked in and sat right over here where Matt Mathis is sitting for their first Sunday ever. And this building had just been dedicated. It's a cool thing that unfolded. And the cool thing is, my most amazing fallback, lean back spot on this is that if Robin and I hadn't chosen youth ministry, he would have blessed us in missions. Or if we would have chosen to go sell insurance, like a lot of youth ministers end up doing at some point, then God would have blessed that. What I tell every senior as they start to debate, what does my future look like? What do I do? I have a very specific I don't care that I give them, and I care a ton. So don't hear that as an I don't, you tell them I don't care. No, I say I don't care in the light of it doesn't matter which direction you go. If you're taking God with you and you're planning on doing good things and he's with you every step of the way, then truly the campus you walk onto doesn't matter. The job you walk into doesn't matter. The military, like whatever your job is, no matter what unfolds in front of you, if you're taking God with you, it's not going to be cupcakes and easiness. But what it is going to be is a joint venture where you've got the creator of the heavens and the universe walking with you, whispering confidence and lifting you up in a way that doesn't make you fall down proof. I still mess up plenty, but it gives us confidence and strength. Out of Matthew chapter 6, one of my favorite sections says this: therefore I tell you, do not worry about your life, what you will eat or drink, or about your body, what you will wear. Is not life more important than food, and the body more important than clothes? Look at the birds of the air. They don't sow or reap or store away in barns, and yet your heavenly Father feeds them. Are you not much more valuable than they are? Can any of you, by worrying, add a single hour to your life? And why do you worry about clothes? See how the flowers of the field grow? They do not labor or spin, yet I tell you that not even Solomon in all of his splendor was dressed like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today, and tomorrow is thrown into the fire, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith? So do not worry, saying, what shall we eat, or what shall we drink, or what shall we wear? For the pagans run after all these things, and your heavenly Father knows that you need them. But seek first his kingdom and his righteousness, and all these things will be given to you as well. Therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about itself. Each day has enough trouble of its own. When I rewind back, you know, I think about end product, or where God brought us, and it's not a finished work. I mean, Robin and I now are what we feel like is a second generation youth ministry family. We started here 20 years ago, and we've done youth ministry consistently for 20 years. But now being back here with a kid in college, two in high school, one in elementary, one in kindergarten, is a crazy mix to where sometimes I call myself a youth ministry grandfather because I've got multiple kids in this room that are the children of kids I had 20 years ago that are not kids anymore. Like, they're younger friends, and that's awesome. It is so cool to see generational ministry happening. But when I rewind and look back at my young, impetuous self, and I think about times where I thought I had it figured out, but I didn't, I can think about times in this building where I had to have a hard conversation with a dad. I was 23 years old, and I pull a dad aside because I know some of the stuff his kid is getting into, maybe some of the trouble they're approaching, and it's not just rumor at this point. I know it's happening, and I'm worried. And so I pull the dad aside, and I say the thing that I even looking back, I feel like maybe it was wise what I said, but I was 23. And then 3 weeks later, I had to ask that same exact dad to drive the church van because I wasn't old enough for the church insurance. And I asked that dad first, and I said, hey, just so you'll know, I'm well aware of how this is going to land. Like, we had this conversation, and now I'm saying, hey, I'm not old enough to drive. Will you do that for me? And we had a funny laugh about it, which is better than me ignoring that moment happened. But I think about approaching and trying and failing and rinsing and repeating and doing that as a community. The times I've felt most fake are when I've messed up and I pretended like it didn't happen, and everybody around me probably noticed that I'm kind of limping from what happened. So owning it and moving forward together, to me, I won't say it's a superpower, but it definitely makes me feel strengthened to not feel like I'm acting, to not feel like I'm wearing a mask, to not feel like I'm pretending for the sake of others, because when I'm pretending, it doesn't matter if everybody else is encouraged and lifted up and moved forward. It feels fake for me. So being my truest self, I don't have to worry about if I'm super, super real with my wife and my friends and those in my core community, then I know they can accept the real me and they bring me in rather than me having to fake it. And if I feel like I'm accepted for a fake mask, that's an overwhelming thing. Last story I'll tell you is when I think about that young, impetuous self, I remember a time walking into Mike's office, my campus minister, and I got to go to lunch with him about 2 weeks ago with Jeremy Davis and another buddy. And as we shared time around the table, I haven't got to see Mike in 10 years. Like, we were close, spent a lot of time in college. He shaped so many young men and women at MTSU, Raiders for Christ, that went on into, from state school ministry, went on into full-time vocational ministry, youth ministry, college ministry, missions, so many cool things. And it came from this guy that is not, he doesn't like to have a microphone. He doesn't enjoy being the upfront, fun, loud guy. But in quiet relationships, one-on-one, he challenged me as much as any person I've ever met to be a better version of what I was presenting. I remember walking in at 19, and Mike had just posted up out in the lobby of the Christian Student Center the leadership. It was like a leadership for small groups. And it was the leader at the top, and it was people who were in their small group at the bottom. This is not a giant deal. I realized this at 19. But at 19, thinking about leadership in this ministry, this was like the first foot in the door. So I thought, being a leader, I'm always there, I'm loud, I make myself the center of attention. I had maybe a misnomer as to what leadership actually was. So I walked in, and I read the list, and I didn't find my own name on it. I found my own name on a list, but not at the head of a list. So I remember walking into Mike's office, not arrogantly, but frustrated. And I walked in and said, "Hey, Mike," I almost wanted to say, "There's been a mistake. Like, you left me off the list." But instead, I just said, "Hey, Mike, small groups." And he already started nodding. He knew exactly what I was there for. And he kind of smirked at me behind his desk. And I said, "Hey, I was left off, like, the leadership." He goes, "You were." That's how he said it. And that was a weird reaction. And I remember saying, "What's that about?" And he said, "Well, Aubrey, you are a fantastic leader." That's what he led with. And I kind of sat back into the chair across from him, like, "Okay, so you're going to rectify your mistake by putting me at the top of the list and fixing that." And he said, "You are a great leader." I said, "Thank you." He goes, "But unfortunately, right now, you're just leading people in circles, and that's not beneficial for anybody." And I was furious. He was right, but I was mad. And I remember telling him, like, "You're my campus minister. You can't say that." And I remember, like, saying several other things to him. And I was almost like pacing around his room, which is not, I'm not a pacer. I'm not normally this guy. And I left his office mad without saying anything. I just walked out of his office. And I'm sure that was a hard moment for him. Being a guy in ministry who says hard things to people, that probably wasn't a warm fuzzy for him. But about 2 weeks of me thinking about it, frustrated with him, and then I became frustrated with myself, not with him, as I began to realize maybe I was the problem. So I walked into his office, and I didn't even say anything. I just sat down. He was already smiling, which made me a little frustrated. And I said, "Mike, all right, assuming that you're correct, I'm not ready to say you're correct, but assuming you were correct, what do I do about it?" And the biggest smile I've ever seen unfolded on his face. And we talk about leadership, and he challenged me to go on a mission trip that summer. And he challenged me in some big ways. And part of that was me being mature enough to come back and saying, "Assuming you're right, I'm not ready to admit it, but I'm at least ready to talk about it." But the bigger thing was he was willing to say hard things in truth and in love to me. So my challenge for us on the tail end of this thing is, as we think about these seniors and every wedding I've ever done, I always tell the couple, there's a lot of other people listening to the words I'm saying right now, but there are a few things I say just to a couple, but I'm saying it through a microphone, so that's weird that everybody else gets to hear. So seniors, I'm saying this to you, and everybody else is going to hear because I'm saying it into a microphone, but you seniors need to know this. We love you. We are in your corner. On your darkest day, on your hardest day in the future, you are not nearly as bad as you think you are. And on your best day, on the day when you think you have it all together, you're not nearly as great as you think you are on your best day. We are all the sum total of our attitudes, energies, and enthusiasms as we chase life and bring joy and difficult times. And our only strength we can have is tethering ourselves to Jesus Christ. And I know you know that. I know you hear that. But as we want to challenge you as a church body to join with us and move forward together, but also knowing that on your darkest day, you can reach out for help, and we will be there along with Jesus to pick you up. Church, as we approach the end of this, I think about a season of worrying, and we're told do not worry. And I personally get irritated when somebody's response to me when I'm worried is to say, "Just don't worry." And that's not probably the font Jesus would use, but throwing words of "don't do the thing you're doing" doesn't really feel like it helps me. What does help me is people showing up next to me in a hard season and being willing to say things that are true to me, whether I like it or not, but they're also staying next to me. They don't say the thing in passing because it's easy to just hear something like you hear it online. And there's so much negativity and review and pain just thrown at us in passing that it's easy sometimes to hear it that way. But somebody who's willing to invest in my life, both in the words they say and showing up and doing the work with me, is somebody that is challenging me to be a better person. They're walking through life with me. So then seniors, as you grow, becoming that for other people. I think we're called to be a lifter of other people during our stronger seasons and somebody that is willing to be lifted up during a harder season. If y'all will, we'll pray and then we will sing together. Father God, thank you so much for being so good to us. Thank you for loving us. Thank you for giving us instructions through your word. Thank you for giving us instructions through your perfect son and his example. And God, thank you for surrounding us with people that love you and want to do the right thing, even though we fail. God, for these seniors, I pray that as they graduate and move on into their next chapter, that we rally around them, we lift them up, we encourage them, and we give them not only good words, but we show up and we stand close to them. And God, we thank you for the gift of your son and for the blessing it is to be called your family. Your son's name we pray. Amen.